Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
This is Jay.
And this is your new Comics Wednesday episode for January 27th, 2021. So Jay and I are going to talk about a few of the books from this week that we've had a chance to read already. Spoiler free. Of course, we don't want to ruin anything. We want you to be able to, you know, read the books for yourselves and enjoy them without us spoiling anything for you. So hopefully get a chance to read this before you head to your comic shop, so you'll know what to be on the lookout for. At the end, I'll give a rundown of some other books that you might want to be on the lookout for that are hitting comic shops today beyond the ones that we're talking about. So why don't you kick it off, Jay? What are you going to talk about first?
I guess I'll go with Marvel, Captain Marvel, number 25. The artist by Lee Garbett and writer Kelly Thompson. Like, Kelly Thompson's been doing Captain Marvel for a while in different runs, so she knows the character pretty well. If from the last episode or last comic that we read, you know, she was captured, she's in the future, and pretty much it's just a rundown on this issue of how the main characters, you know, get together to, you know, to get for the big fight scene. But it's not really a big fight scene, I guess, until the next issue. Kind of leaves you with a cliffhanger, but it pretty much shows you how, you know, everybody gives a little backstory to some of the characters in the future, you know, how things, what happened in the future and what became of different characters. I don't want to give away spoilers. And pretty much how they do a team up at the end and then they get ready for the big fight scene. But I mean, pretty much it was just the rundown of, you know, just a backstory really. And just, you know, them getting together to escape.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering, for some reason, I thought when I saw this, I saw that it was a King in Black tie-in, but then when I'm looking at it right now, obviously it's not. And that's what I was kind of wondering. I'm like, how can it be a King in Black tie-in if it's, you know, in the future? But I see that it's not really. But the other thing that I'm curious about, and obviously, you know, we don't want you to spoil anything, but we did hear an announcement from Marvel recently that, that Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, is going to tap into the magical side of the Marvel universe, which is where someplace she's never been. She's never been a magical character. She's very much rooted in sci-fi. But what we saw last issue with this Son of Namor ruler kind of thing, he does kind of delve into magic. So being that this whole magic side of Captain Marvel is supposed to be coming relatively soon, I can't see that they'd have a chance to do another story arc in between, which leads me to believe that this story is going to be how Carol somehow gets magical powers. So is there any hint of that here?
You gotta wait. I guess in the last panel you kind of see where they're going with that route, but it won't be till like the very, very end.
Yeah, because we still have two more.
Yeah, this is part four. So yeah, I think it's six parter.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Okay, well, let me talk about my first book. It's Kaiju Score number 3 from Aftershock. It's called Chums. It's from James Patrick, writer. Rem Brew is the artist. Dave Sharp does the letters. And I've been talking about this book. This is, like I said, the third issue. I've been talking about it every time it hits stands. It's really, really fun because it mixes two genres that are pretty exciting and pretty popular. You know, you have the Kaiju, the giant monsters, which I'm not the biggest fan of. Probably my favorite would be like Pacific Rim. Actually, both of them I really enjoy. The first one more so than the second, but they're both great. But I'm not the biggest Kaiju fan, but I did enjoy those movies. But what I do really enjoy is heist stories and heist movies and that kind of thing. And so, like I said, this is mixing those two genres, and it's doing it really well. And the characters are interesting. The narrative is interesting. The art, while it's not my favorite style because it is pretty stylized, it does have really clean lines. The backgrounds are a little light, and I do think that if the backgrounds were a little more fleshed out in some of the panels, it would give the art a more polished feel. So I feel like there's a missed opportunity there. But the colors are done well, and overall, it's just a really, really fun story. If anybody ever read The Big Con Job, which was written by Jimmy Palmiotti, and the art was by Domo Stanton. It came out from Boom a few years ago. And Jimmy had a co-writer on that series, and I cannot remember who it is right now off the top of my head. And I apologize to that creator for that. But this story is just a whole heck of a lot of fun. And like most heist stories, the plan that you have doesn't survive. What's the saying? If you're in the military, like your plan of action only survives until you make enemy contact or something like that. And then there's always things that have to change. And so heist stories usually go one of two ways. Either, you have it planned down to the second and everything goes right and it goes like dominoes. But more often when you're watching a heist story unfold, there's always a monkey wrench thrown in there, where something unexpected happens. Well, this is the issue where something really unexpected happens and the crew has to sort of think on their feet to try to make things happen. And it lends some drama. It lends to some humor, and it just builds on the story. So I love this story. I was sort of debating on whether I was going to read Kaiju Score, just because, like I said, even though I enjoy the Pacific Rim movies, I'm not the biggest fan of the Kaiju, but I was like, you know what? It's a heist story. Let me at least read the first issue. And right from the first issue, I was totally sucked in. I love the sort of character archetypes that James Patrick has chosen to include in the story, because even though he's using sort of those archetypes that you would expect, like you have the guy that's the planner, and then you have the character that's the safecracker, and you have the character that's the person who gets all the equipment, and that kind of thing. He's thrown a little twist into each of those types of characters. So they're not just the generic run of the mill style of those characters. Like every one of them, he's thrown in something that adds more depth and more layers to the characters. And it adds to the story. There's more things that he gets to play with narratively. So I think it works really well. And like I said, the art by Rem Brew, even though the backgrounds can be kind of light sometimes, he does a great job with the character acting. There's quite a few pages in here where when it's actually showing like the plans of the heist and how it's going to work out, he's got these interesting sort of detailed drawings of pages of how they hope things will go. And so that's great. And the facial expressions, again, it's his art style is a little exaggerated, a little stylized, and the facial expressions are a great example of that. So if you haven't checked it out, I really, really highly recommend it. I think a lot of people who might not be familiar with Aftershock or might not realize just how good their stories are, this is like a perfect example of the kind of stories that Aftershock is doing that nobody else is doing this kind of stuff. And it's really, really great. So highly recommended. What do you have up next, Jay?
I'm going to go with Image, Postal America. It's issue number 2. It's the art and story is done by Steve. I'm going to mess up his last name. Scroshi, is that right?
Yeah.
And color is by, I'm sorry, color is Dave Stewart, and lettering is Fondographics. I guess that's one name, I guess. But I am actually collecting this one because I appreciate when an artist can do the writing, and because I think that they actually can put it's their story, so they're actually doing the art. I think they put more into the art in it, and they have the details of exactly how they want to do the story. So I kind of appreciate that. And it's also got that heavy metal vibe. If you ever read Heavy Metal magazine, you know how the comic was, detailed, but kind of not really clean, but just you have that rough feel to it, and the colors aren't that very bright. Just let you know how it's kind of dark in that era. So I like that. And it's supposed to be in the future, obviously. In the first issue, there was a rebellion. So, the president, which is funny to me, it looks a lot like Ronald Reagan. I don't know if they did that on purpose, but I guess to show, the control of the mighty left, right, whatever you want to call it. But they control everything. And of course, like I say, he's got the blue suit, which Reagan always wore. And it's just hilarious because, like, that's Ronald Reagan with the blue eyes and black hair. But the main two characters are Caroline and Mike, and the first episode they got captured. So now they're meeting the locals, I guess, in the Savage Land, which doesn't go too well for them. You know, there's a escape plan. They get out. There's a lot of bickering between them too, that, you know, they don't really agree what's going on, but they, you know, got to work together to get out of it. And as you go on in the story, you know, they shows like Mike is more, you know, I got to do the right thing. And she isn't that kind of character. She's like, you know, whatever, I just got to take care of me. If you're going to come, fine. Not, I don't really care. She's that kind of personality. But you also find out there are also, you know, like there's other things behind the scenes going on. And it does leave you wanting more of the story. And I enjoy the character. And the thing about this is adult content. I wouldn't let kids read this at all, because there's a lot of, you know, adult language in it they use. And some of the scenes are not for kids and what he draws.
Yeah, it's a brutal book for sure. And I mean, I don't want to nitpick at it, but he does things that it seems like he's doing them for shock value. Like something happens to one of the main characters in this book and you're like, okay, well, they're not going to be a main character anymore. But then he like, he kind of, you know, has a magic wish and, you know, all of a sudden that problem is solved. And so it's a little bit of, I don't want to say lazy writing, you know, a little ex Deus Machina where, oh, you wrote yourself into a corner, but then now there's this magical thing that happens that prevents that. So I kind of thought she was just going to go away, because we saw that in the first, you know, in the first issue, we who we think are the main characters, and then they get killed like right away.
Right. So, it kind of leaves misleading.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, are we doing that again? Well, it turns out not. So, but yeah, I am enjoying it, but man, Jay's right. This book is for way adult. I wouldn't even want like a 12-year-old reading this, you know, 12, 13. This is like, it's, you know, 16, 17, 18 at the minimum, because it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, they don't want them to get their imagination too crazy, you know, and go ask questions. Yeah. I mean, even at the end, they show the preview for the third cover. You're like, okay, I wouldn't let my kid buy that because of that cover.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, up next, I have, I think is this the only? Oh, no. So I'm reviewing two DC books, but they're both Black Label books. I'm not going to talk about any of their regular titles. Usually Manny's the one that covers the regular titles. He wasn't able to join us tonight. That being said, you know, most of the regular titles that are coming out from DC right now are the Future State books. So, you know, we do our Future State Fridays where we go full spoilers and break down those books to a great degree. So if you're curious about any of those Future State books from this week, we'll be covering them in depth. And I think Jay's going to talk about a couple of them as well. So just a heads up. But the first Black Label book I'm going to talk about is The Other History of the DC Universe Book 2. Story by John Ridley, layouts by Giuseppe Camuncola, finishes by Andrea Cucci, colors by Jose Villarubia, and lettering by Steve Wands. So what's interesting about these, you know, it's John Ridley. You're talking about an Oscar-winning or Academy Award-winning screenwriter, and he's writing comics. Now, he's also the one writing Next Batman. Next Batman honestly has not been that great, in my opinion. But the first issue of The Other History of the DC Universe was maybe one of the best comics I read of 2020. It was spectacular. I didn't quite enjoy this second issue as much, but that being said, I don't think the second issue is any worse, or it's not a step down in quality at all from what the first issue was. The first issue focused on Black Lightning. And when you're talking about this book, and you know, if you didn't hear me talk about the first issue, go back and find it, because I really got deep into it. It was my book of the week. It was so moving and it was so powerful. And when we're talking about the other history of the DC universe, what DC has done, they've brought in this incredible storyteller, John Ridley, and they're telling the history of the DC universe from the perspective of diverse characters, you know, marginalized characters who see things much differently than the typical Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. You know, when you're talking about what hardships they've had to undergo in terms of, you know, personally or from the aspect of who they are in society, it's much different than when you're talking about characters like Black Lightning, or in this case, we're talking about Mal Duncan, who doesn't even have superpowers. Are you talking about his wife, Karen, who eventually becomes Bumblebee in the Teen Titans? So Mal Duncan, he was a member of the original Teen Titans, but he didn't even have any superpowers. He was kind of like the mascot. So here you have these two persons of color who at various times were members of the Teen Titans, but not really, not members like Raven was a member, or Cyborg was a member, or Wonder Girl was a member. You know, they were, I mean, when you think about it, the Teen Titans are a secondary team, and these characters are even secondary members of a secondary team. So they're definitely in the background. They're almost, you know, oh, well, you got to have the one token black guy on the team. You know what I'm saying? And so we get the history of the DC universe through their eyes. And Ridley does a great job of not just giving us the history of the Teen Titans, but the DC universe as a whole, plus real events that happened in these times. You know, they talk about the very famous tennis match in 1975 between Jimmy Connors and Arthur Ashe. Like that's part of this narrative. And, you know, it goes all the way up through the crisis, and they talk about Supergirl and, you know, her kind of evolution and her debut as a hero, and the way that Karen saw that, you know, the way that she took it of Superman, you know, hiding her for many years and then not wanting to, you know, reveal her identity until he felt it was going to be safe, and then seeing her die in crisis anyway. So there's a lot of real life events along with very pivotal and big events in the DC universe that are all tied in together here with these two characters talking about kind of what the DC universe means to them. And, you know, the fact that they're a couple, they're married, they've been married for, you know, years. They probably have one of the longest marriages in the history of comics when you think about it. And they were never really, you know, one of those couples where it was going to get retconned away, or they had some kind of falling out or had a divorce. They were just together, and they were always together. So that's kind of nice to see. But the other part of it is that you're getting their view of, you know, how this has all played out. And, you know, just like we did with Black Lightning in the first issue, but the reason this one didn't resonate as much with me is just because I don't have as much invested in these characters. And I think that's probably going to be the case for a lot of people. There's going to be a lot fewer people that know these characters and are familiar with these characters. Whereas Black Lightning, even though he's not by any means an A-lister, I think more people know him, especially because of the TV show. So I don't think that's necessarily John Ridley's fault. I think, you know, he's kind of limited when you start talking about, you know, persons of color that you're going to tell the history of the DC universe with, the other history of the DC universe with, you know, through their eyes. And these characters really should be more well known, because they have, especially Mal, you know, he has been there for a long time. You know, he has been was part of the Teen Titans for a very long period of time. And, you know, he went on a lot of adventures with them, and a lot of the things that are called out here are John Ridley basically saying, man, when those stories were told back in the day, Mal wasn't treated as a character. He wasn't treated with a lot of respect. You know, that storytelling back then was problematic. And again, you know, it kind of reflects society at that time. And that's just kind of the way it is. And hopefully we're all sort of better for it. We look back at those time periods and we can learn from them and do better going forward. And it's kind of the value of doing a story like this. We're talking about, you know, the history of the DCU, but look back at the things that weren't done the correct way. And the other thing I'll mention why other history of the DC universe issues work so well is because they're not set up in the way that a normal book would be set up. You know, like Ridley's The Next Batman, it's a traditional comic book, right? It's word balloons and, you know, dialogue boxes, and it's sequential art. And, you know, we're seeing these people go through, you know, various actions and what have you. In these other history of the DC universe, it's much more of a prose style. You just get these paragraphs of story, and all the art are basically montage pieces or collages, and then you just get like text over them. So it's like you're seeing these snapshots of events that are happening, and you're hearing the characters, you know, basically narrate the events and not just tell us what happened, but also how it happened, how in the way they saw it. Like, you know, there's always different kind of ways of seeing what happened, right? Because you bring your own perspective to it. There's the truth, there's the, you know, objective truth of what actually happened if you're just you know, watching it as it unfolds, you know, like you just see a video of what happened and you're seeing it empirically, and this is what happened. And then there's the way somebody from this culture sees that because they bring their own biases and prejudices, and this person from color sees it this way. And so everybody has a little bit of a different perspective. So that's what we're getting here. We're getting the narration of events. You know, we're being told, okay, this is what happened, but also how they feel about it and how it's interpreted by them. And some of the event, and they trade back and forth. So in the first issue, it was all Black Lightning's perspective. In this one, we get both Karen's perspective, Karen Duncan, and Mal Duncan's perspective. And they trade off back and forth. And sometimes they overlap and they talk a little bit about the same thing. And even they have different perspectives on it. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes they whatever character's turn it is to talk next, they just move on to the next thing. So it works very well having the two characters, having the husband and wife, trade off the narrative back and forth. It works really well. It's a compelling read, but it is a long read because I think even more so than the first one, there's even more text in this issue. And it's 40 pages, I think. So it's a lot. It's a good read. You definitely get your money's worth, and the art's really great. Like some of the montage pieces are spectacular. Like I said, it covers the crisis. So we get a depiction of that famous scene with Supergirl having passed away, and we get some really great scenes with the Titans. And so, yeah, it's a great series. Highly, highly, highly recommended. Like I said, it wasn't quite as good as the first one, but only because I'm not as invested in these characters. I thought the first one was perfect. So I'm really looking forward to the next issue. I'm not sure if we've been told who who's narrating the last issue, but I'm very excited for whoever it is. All right. What do you have up next, Jay?
Alrighty. I was going to say that growing up, I always thought that DC didn't do a very good job of showing like minority characters, you know, heroes, but I think Marvel did a better job to me.
Yeah.
I always thought that. I don't know why. Just because they had, you know, Captain America with Falcon. I mean, yep. And then you had Blade. I mean, you had characters and, you know, they were there. And I think they just kept with the times, letting people know, hey, you can be a color person and still be a hero. Yeah, I just felt that Marvel did a better job with it, especially with God Loves, Man Kills, because they show that, you know, you can relate to the X-Men because they're considered minorities too. They're outcast. Yeah. And, you know, Magneto is a Jew and he was in a concentration camp and he survived that. That's why he hates humans so much, because, you know, they hate him for two things, you know, being Jewish and for being a mutant.
Yeah. And Black Panther was a big character early on too.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just want to throw that out there.
No, 100%. You're 100% right. And here's the thing. It's like, DC had the characters, like they had Mal Duncan, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, but they used him to, I mean, he had no power. Why is he the only one that has no powers? Why is he the one that's always getting in fights with Speedy, you know, with Roy Harper? Why is he the guy that Roy Harper is constantly bagging on and making fun of? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Missed opportunities, I guess. I don't know, but just, I don't know. I guess I just missed that. I don't know. But like I said, I just think Marvel did a better job.
Oh, they totally did. Look, I mean, Marvel, like I said, I keep, you know, not to go back to Black Panther again, but they come up with a, a person of color in the, for the Marvel universe, and they don't make him just some, you know, teenager with no superpowers. He's a king. Guy's ruler of his own country, you know? So yeah, I just, Stan Lee definitely had a better grasp on like diversity and yeah, he just, yeah, Marvel just did a better job. That's just bottom line.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to stick with Future State. I read Batman Superman number one. And the reason I like this book so much is because now we got Bruce Wayne and, you know, Clark Kent. We're like, oh, okay. Now we're actually got the real characters, you know. The story is by Gene Yang and art by Ben Oliver. And pretty much, I guess it's like the prequel, I guess, before the Magistrate takes over Gotham, I guess you would say. So you're going to have a team up, obviously, of Superman and Batman doing an investigation. And I guess Superman is not supposed to be in Gotham because, you know, he's got, you know, but he shows up anyway. And I guess, I think they mentioned the, I guess, the street drug a few times. I don't know if I can say that or not. I don't know. I don't want to do any spoilers on that one. But it has side effects, this new street drug. So that's why they're doing an investigation. You find out more what's, you know, going on in Gotham behind the streets because, you know, people are like in hiding and stuff like that. The very last panel kind of lets you wonder what's going to happen next. You know, it's kind of a surprise, I guess you can say, you know, a little spoiler, I guess, but I won't say anything. But it's good. I liked it because, like I said, Future State hasn't been very exciting for me at all. None of the stories, but this one was because there's actually, you know, the characters that, you know, Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne, you're like, okay, now we're back to the originals. So it shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah. I really liked it too. I mean, I was pretty sure I was going to like it cause it's Gene Yang on Superman. And I've always loved him whenever he works on the character. And when I was reading the Joshua Williamson Batman Superman, and it was fine. It wasn't anything great, but when I heard Gene Yang was coming on, now I'm excited. Like now, okay, I'm definitely. In fact, I just did my order for the books coming out in, I guess, March, I think. And I was like, oh yeah, there's his first regular. There's Gene Yang's first regular issue of Batman's Superman. So let me be sure to get that. But here's the one kind of complaint, I guess. I have more than one complaint about Future State, but here's what I'm going to say about it. We have talked about our new comic book episodes, as well as our Future State Fridays, that the books don't happen in any particular order, right? They don't, like, all of Future State doesn't take place at the same time. Some of them are further in the future. Some of them are, you know, closer to our current time. It's clear that this Batman Superman book happens sooner than almost all, well, it happens sooner than any of the other Future State books we've read so far, because like Jay said, this is like the Magistrate has just come into Gotham. So my question is, and that's fine that not everything has to be in the same timeline. If you're talking about, you know, a glimpse into the future, how far you're glimpsing for a particular title, they don't all have to line up. But my question is, why did DC not publish this one first? Like at least put some kind of order on them, you know, like put a, you know, like they used to do in the Superman books back in the day, my favorite era of Superman, the triangle era, where you're like, read this one first, read this, you know what I mean? Like,
give you a list.
Yeah. Or like a date stamp, like this takes place in, you know, the year 2201, and you know, Swamp Thing is like year 2560, you know, it's way farther in the future, because then at least, you know, you have an idea. Because I felt like when I read this, I liked it, and one of the better Future State titles out there. And I'm like, okay, this makes more sense now. It helps to make more sense of some of the other books we've read set in Gotham, because you're setting the stage, you know what I mean? And the other part about it that I was like, wait, what? That doesn't make sense is Jay mentioned Superman's not supposed to come to Gotham because they have the whole no mask things. Superman doesn't wear a mask and he doesn't even have a secret identity. So And I guess they just say no masks. They really mean no vigilantes and
Yeah, probably like more no capes. No capes.
But I just thought that was kind of, I'm like, he's not wearing a mask and he doesn't even have a secret identity. But I guess it's supposed to be no vigilantism. The other thing is Ben Oliver, man, he really is a cover artist these days. He hardly ever does interior art anymore. So I don't know. In a way I like the art, but in a way I didn't, because
It was different.
the backgrounds are really light, and I don't think that his transition, and this will happen a lot when an artist has been doing just a lot of cover work for, a number of years. Because if you don't exercise that muscle of doing the transitions, the actual sequential storytelling, I think you're not as good at it. You just get out of practice. So there were times where the art looked great, and there were times where the art was like, ooh, that's not the best transition or that kind of thing. So, but again, it's a minor nitpick. All right, let me talk about my next book. It's another Black Label book. It is Joker Harley Criminal Sanity number 7. This is from Cami Garcia, art by Miko Suyan and Jason Badower, colors by Annette Kwok, letters by Richard Starking and Tyler Smith. So this is basically an alternate reality version of Harley Quinn and Joker. And you've heard me say it many times on this podcast that I'm not a big fan of Harley Quinn, and I can't stand the Joker. And so this was another book where I was reluctant to check it out. I'm like, nah, it's just not for me, and that's fine. And then I just heard a lot of people saying, it's so good. You got to read it. It's so good. It's so good. And I'm like, all right, well, let me give it a try. And I think I picked it up like after the third issue came out. And I'm like, okay, I read the first issue, powered through like issues 1, 2, and 3. And then I'm anxiously awaiting every issue. 'Cause here's the thing. This gives us the side of Harley, the thing, the part of Harley's character that I find most interesting, which is her, the whole idea of her being really intelligent, her being the psychologist or the psychiatrist, and that criminal profiler. That's basically what she is here. She's a criminal profiler. And this version of the Joker is much more grounded and down to earth. But he's still, for me, my least favorite part of the story. I'm still not a big fan of him because he's still just a crazy guy, basically. But the fact that it's not this zany, crazy, Harley, whacking people with a giant mallet, I love. Like she's great in this story. And in this particular issue, we're finally starting to see that relationship or that bond that is sort of at the center, or that is sort of very important, or has been very important in the early relationship of Joker and Harley. And that's probably why this is one, probably not my favorite issue of the series so far. Like I've been really digging it. This one, when I got done, I didn't quite feel like it hit the mark as much as a lot of the others did, because now all of a sudden I'm starting to see, okay, well, is Harley going to make, are we going to see Harley make the same kind of mistake she's made in the past, where she takes it too far with the Joker, in terms of, kind of switching teams. And I get it, if that's the path that Cami Garcia goes down, because it does make sense. That is part of Harley's origin story. And this could literally end up being just a different version of her origin story, a more grounded version of her origin story, but she'll still end up in that place where she becomes much more similar to the Harley that people are used to seeing in the regular DC universe. And if that's the case, I'm going to be a little bit disappointed, but I don't think it makes this a bad story. I just think that's not where I wanted to see it go. But again, I totally get it, because that's Harley. And I think if that is the direction it goes, then people who are fans of Harley in the regular DC universe, they're gonna love this. Whereas if it ended up the way that I would like to see it end up, whereas Harley just ends up kind of on the ends up as a hero and not zany and crazy, then the argument could be made, well, that's not even Harley at all. So I totally get it. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen. I think there's 9 issues in this, so we've got 2 more to go. And then another part of the reason that I picked it up in the first place is because Miko Suyun art, which is this sort of hyper realistic photo style, and he doesn't go as realistic as I've seen him do in other things like Bloodshot, for example. But the art in this book is so, so good. So if you're a fan of Joker, if you're a fan of Harley Quinn, this is definitely a different take on those characters, but I think it's highly, highly enjoyable. And I can't say enough good things about this story. It's so good. Are you reading this, Jay?
Of course, I'm very invested in Harley Quinn and the Joker. I got like when her first appearance in the comic book, it was Batman Adventures. I got that because she was in it. I mean, she was appearing in the cartoon, but the comic's like, oh, she's actually in the comic. Now that's worth a lot of money. I bought the first series run, this the second, the third, and even this. But I love the artwork and I love the idea that Harley is not goofy. She's an intelligent woman. You know she is. So this is what you're seeing, and I like that. But again, it's like don't go that way. Don't go the Joker path. Because you see it there, but she's fighting it. You can tell in her eyes. I mean, the artist pins it, her facial expression is like, she's not gonna she doesn't want to cross it, but she's got a little thing going there.
Yeah, I wasn't worried about her going that direction at all, but until this issue where I'm like, oh no,
Yeah.
she's gonna go Harley. So I don't know, I guess we'll see. All right, what do you have up next?
Well, I guess we'll stick with Future State, Suicide Squad. All right. So first off, I'm a huge fan of Suicide Squad from like the very first run to what they had the last couple of years. So I was like, all right, we'll see what they do in the Future State. The writer is Robbie Thompson. Artist is Javier Fernandez. Colorist is Alex Sinclair, and letter by Wes Abbott. So the Suicide Squad, I'm guessing, is in the future because all these characters are now the heroes on the cover, because it's not a spoiler, it's a cover. They're not the normal characters. They're different personas, of different characters wearing the suit, But it starts off with a couple of battles between the bad guys, but I guess you got to kind of figure out who's bad, who's good. It kind of leaves you wondering, what side is right, what side is wrong, which I like. The artwork, I guess, could be a little bit cleaner because it was so dark. It's like every panel was so dark. I mean, you have stuff going behind the scenes, so I know they got to have that, those panels, darker, but it seemed like the whole book was dark. Except for some scenes, like not to like the very end where I mean, that's no spoiler. Waller's in charge. He's always in charge of Suicide Squad. I don't care if it could be 100 years down the road, she'll still be in charge somehow. But the big thing in the story was, one of the main characters gets it. So I'm not going to say who, but it was like, really? Okay, let's move on. But it wasn't a bad story. I mean, the last panel, you see what's going on. You're like, okay, I guess, because you're like, so the people there on the front cover aren't who you think they are, then, I guess, because it's very misleading. But that's why you have to like pick it up to read if you're curious about it. But I thought it was entertaining. I mean, is it worth picking up? I guess if you're a Suicide Squad fan, but if not, you can probably just leave it on. But the backstory was way better. I don't know what's with these backstories, but they always seem so much better. I don't get it. But it's in the future. It deals with Black Adam and the planet. It's I'm not gonna say what planet, but it's pretty much the JL headquarters now. You're like, what? Okay. But they fight like some really super bad guys. You get a guest appearance that doesn't last very long. Again, like the first story, the hero dies quick. You're like, what? That's it? Okay. But the artwork and the backstory was so colorful and detailed. I was just amazed by it. I don't want to say the name, so I don't want to give it away. It was written by Jeremy Adams and Fernando Passerine. Am I say that right? Not too sure. But
Yeah, Fernando Passerine, yeah.
Passerine, yeah. But the artwork is phenomenal. The coloring is phenomenal. I give up props to Jeremy Cox. Phenomenal. I don't know why this didn't have its own run. I don't get it. I mean, the first story was meh. I guess they did it because the Suicide Squad was a big flagship, so they wanted to keep the title going. That's what I'm going with. But the backstory is way better. Like I said, I think the backstory is more future. It's all in the future, but you know there are some familiar characters in there, and you know you find out you know someone's suspecting a you know a kid. I don't want to. That's about all I can tell you about that. But it's good. I liked it. I'm looking forward to the second one because the very last panel, you see a character you thought like, okay, well, who's that?
Yeah,
this shows out of nowhere. You're like, okay, so they did the damage, and they're like, hey, guess who I am. But it's good. I mean, if anything else, just pick it up just for the backstory. I mean, it was just awesome. I don't get it, but you know, I'm not running the show with her, but I definitely would have had Black Adam on its own series.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. The artwork and the color for the Black Adam story is just head and shoulders better than the Suicide Squad story. And again, here's another situation, and maybe this is why you don't do it. In terms of putting some kind of year on the cover, because it's clear that this Black Adam story happens much further in the future than the Suicide Squad story, because we're seeing these versions of the Justice League that are, you know, from far in the future. And that's kind of interesting because their character designs are real interesting.
The costumes are weird.
Yeah, there's so much we don't know. Like when that character mentions they're pregnant, well, you don't think it could happen because I'm actually a, I'm not going to say, but Jay knows what I'm talking about. You're like, wait, she's a what? That's why she's that color. Okay. All right. That's weird.
Yeah.
but again, it's fun and it's interesting. And I think that's the biggest difference between the two stories. Like why one is enjoyable and one is meh. Like Jay said, the Black Adam story has crazy ideas and crazy colors and crazy art and crazy ideas. And it's just a whole hell of a lot of fun. Whereas the first story, it's all angst and, you know, anytime you bring Amanda Waller in, that's just like the whole mood of the story is just going to take a dump, you know, because she's such a negative character. I've gotten to the point where I can't stand her. She's one of my most reviled characters. She's trying to catch the Joker in my mind of characters that I just hate. Because there's no complexity to her.
She's
always a bitch.
She hates everything.
Yeah, she hates everybody. She's always betraying people and backstabbing people. And I'm at the point, I'm not buying this, oh, she wants what's best for the US, she wants what's best for the government or blah, blah, blah. No, she's not an anti-hero anymore. She's not fighting, you know, the man or whatever. She's just a villain at this point. She's just a villain. I don't care whose head you're blowing up. I don't care if you're blowing up, you know, King Shark's head or Slipknot's head or Killer Frost's head. You're murdering people. You're killing people. And that makes you a villain.
Oh, yeah. It's and either her I, way or no way. That's what yeah. I always got from her. I was like,
and I'm done with her. I'm done with her. I think she's a terrible character. And at this point, DC just needs to get rid of her. Like, that's it. I mean, that's it. She was problematic at best when she came out because she was such a cliche. You know, she was the heavy set, angry black woman, you know, with a very, you know, cliched background growing up in the projects and, you know, poor and brought herself up by her bootstraps and whatever. And yeah, I get it. You're trying to make her look like a strong, you know, female black character. I get that, except it's reductive because you're doing it in such a way that's just borrowing from every cliche in the book. And now you've basically turned her into a straight up villain. So
she's Lex Luthor. That's all she is. To me, she's like a female Lex Luthor.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
So you just need to get rid of her. And actually, why don't you get rid of her and replace her with an actual realistic, you know, strong black woman who's actually a role model, instead of having her show up in comics and just be this character you love to hate, who would be a terrible role model for anybody, black, white, purple, or otherwise. I just can't stand her at this point. All, you know, everything out of her mouth is a lie. You know, she's going to backstab. She's going to betray. Like, yeah, I'm just done with her. I'm so sick of Amanda Waller at this point. I'm just done.
She don't like her.
Yeah. As soon as she showed up, I was in the story. I'm like, I mean, it already wasn't very good. And then as soon as she showed up, and you know, she shows up first, you know, just as a voice, because like Jay said, you know, when it's the Suicide Squad, that she, you know, she's calling the shots. So as soon as you see that, the word balloon there, that's clearly like a radio signal or whatever, that's telling the Suicide Squad to do this or do that. You're like, oh, well, there's Amanda Waller giving them orders. At that point, I was already like, well, yep, this story's going to suck. And I was right.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even guess. I was like, that's Amanda. I mean, I was reading the first one. I was like, that's Amanda. Sure enough. Like, yep. It's like, man, she's still alive.
Yep. Still alive. Still annoying. So, all right, let me move on to some Marvel titles. I'll talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 58. This one's written by Nick Spencer. We have pencils by Marcelo Ferreira. Inks are by Wayne Faulkner. Colors by Maury Hallowell. And letters by Joe Caramagna. So, you know, last couple issues of Amazing Spider-Man, I thought we were turning a corner with Nick Spencer. We're finally getting away from telling the Kindred story, and we're going to do some other things with some of the seeds that were planted in this Kindred story. But I guess not. Now all we've done is we've basically taken the Kindred plotline and made it the subplot again, and we're starting to layer over some other more pressing storylines. And this one in this issue has to do with Mr. Negative. So I don't know. I want to like it more than I do, because those last couple of issues did show, I think, what Spider-Man could be under Nick Spencer's direction, if he can just finish off the Kindred storyline that he's been telling for 58 issues now. I don't get why he just continues to want to drag that out. Like, enough, dude. It's 58 issues and we're still dealing with the same villain. We're still dealing with the Kindred, who is Harry Osborn. Like, I get that he's an important Spider-Man supporting character, but 58 issues and we still don't have a resolution on this. It's too much, man. It's too much. So with this issue, we see Spider-Man still trying to deal with the fallout of the Kindred. You know, we saw the Kindred get captured a couple of issues ago. He's still trapped. And rather than just are still imprisoned, I should say, in a Raven home, a sane asylum that's run by his father. But rather than just having a resolution to that story, it's like, okay, that storyline with Kindred has been paused while Peter tries to deal with the fallout of it. And then we're going to introduce some other villains that are going to take the attention off of Kindred for a while. But that's basically the status quo that we had in the title for the first 46 issues before Spencer finally made the Kindred story the main plot. And now, instead of resolving it, it's just becoming a subplot again. So I had hope, and now he's kind of dashed those hopes, and I'm worried again. So, you know, the Kingpin has been a part of the story for the last few issues. He's here. Mr. Negative showed up in the end of the last issue. He's here. He's back. And, you know, it's all Spencer's definitely tying it all in together. So if you like stories that where you have a bunch of different plot lines that are all interwoven together and they go on and on and on and on, then this is the perfect book for you, you know, because as I said, Mr. Negative shows up here, and we saw Mr. Negative, I don't even know how many issues ago, 8 or 9 issues ago, when we were doing the Sin Eater storyline, and we saw that his kind of negative persona. If you're not familiar with Mr. Negative, he's kind of like a yin and yang character in and of himself. He has like a positive side and a negative side, thus the name Mr. Negative. So kind of like a Two-Face, except he like literally transforms from one to the other. But yeah, I mean, this is apparently we're going to get a Mr. Negative story for the next couple issues here. In fact, this is called Negative Space. Part one. That's the name of the story arc. So I guess we're going to get a 6-issue Mr. Negative story now, and still not fully resolving the kindred storyline. So I don't know, man. I don't know how much longer I can keep picking up Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, I just put together an Amazing Spider-Man run from like issue 200 to 800. So part of me wants to keep picking it up, but I don't know. I may just drop it and try to pick up the issues later just for to keep my collection going, keep my run going, and not actually buy them off the rack, because then it's like I'm supporting this bad book. So, yeah. Anyway, I did mention Two-Face. It made me think of something. I saw somebody post on Twitter a picture of Two-Face, and it said, My four-year-old thinks this Batman character is called Toothpaste, and I'm here for that. And it's so great too, because it's a picture of the Batman, the animated series, Two-Face, and the color of Two-Face's scarred side does look like the coloring of toothpaste. So I'm like, I could totally see why a four-year-old would think instead of Two-Face, it's toothpaste. Cause look, half his face is smeared with toothpaste. So anyway, I just thought of that. Cause I said, Two-Face. So, all right, what do you have up next, Jay?
All right. Well, I know you hate Spider-Man, and I'm getting a little tired of the story myself. I'm not going to lie to you. I think.
I mean, I don't hate it. I like the character, but.
No, I love Spider-Man. I mean, I think one of the best stories ever was Kraven's Last Hunt. That was an awesome
story. Oh, yeah.
Series. Yeah. That was like the first time comics ever decided to go, like, if a character had like three titles going, like he did, he had Amazing, Spectacular, Web. They were like, hey, listen, you can't have him in the grave and then have him fighting the octopus. So have it going in all three of them. They're like, okay. And everybody else copied it. So Marvel did it again. They started that. All right. I'm going to stick with Future State. It was Legion of Superheroes. All right. But just looking at the cover, I wouldn't have bought this. But the only reason I would buy it is because it's written by Brian Bettis. Art is by Riley Rosmo, letters by David Sharp, and ink is by Ivan. I'm going to mess up his last name. Pasilia? I'm going to mess
up. Placencia.
That's it. Some of these names. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the colors by Placencia. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not a big Legion of Superheroes fan. And like I said, the cover didn't really catch my eye. Obviously, it's in the future because you've got a planet that's named after a city. I'm not telling you. And you got a bunch of weird language in the bottom. So I don't know. It's far in the future. Pretty much I know you got to give comic books, what, two or three issues before you actually can go, eh. But this one was meh for me. But like every great story, I suppose, you got to start with a backstory. So it's pretty much all the Legion of Superheroes. They disbanded themselves, and pretty much they're trying to regroup, and they're trying to collect all the heroes from different parts of the galaxy to go do something they messed up, you know, to fight one more bad guy one more time. So they're kind of a lot of arguing, bickering. They show where some of these characters are at in different planets, and how everything's kind of pieced together and trying to get them all together to do one more team up, I guess you can say, as, you know, the Legion to go do this battle. So you meet some of the characters that, you know, are new, and it's not too bad. The artwork isn't, it's different, but the cover was just, I don't know, it just didn't really catch my eye. I don't know, something about the cover, I don't like it at all. But the story's not that bad. Like I said, I like the writer, so I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. Maybe it'll get, you know, better, because I know he's got to do, you know, the baseline of all the characters and them coming together to, you know, to do it. But there was no backstories. There was no second stories in here. I was like, oh, no second story. Because I was hoping something would be better at the end, you know, at the back end.
Yeah, I'm a big Legion of Superheroes fan. I've not been a fan of what Bendis has been doing with them. And he's been, for me, a huge disappointment for his entirety at DC. So I expected nothing from this book. And then when I saw that it was being drawn by one of the DC artists that I dislike the most, I don't like Riley Rosmo's art at all. It's very stylized. It's very messy, hard to follow. I just aesthetically don't like it. That being said, this art from Rosmo is even worse than normal. And again, we've seen that in a lot of Future State art. where they're rushed, and so the quality is even worse than it normally is. So basically what I'm looking at is some of the worst Riley Rossmo art I've ever seen. And it seems like Bendis wrote the dialogue and the pacing and even the plot to some extent is just kind of weird. And like he's trying to pair up the tone of the story with the weird Rossmo art, which that's a legitimate thing, and that's good if an artist can do that. Except if the art is so bad, you're actually, and again, I haven't been a fan of what Bendis is doing in Legion, but this is even worse than his usual Legion stuff, because it's like he's you have bad art and his writing is sinking down to the level of the art. This for me was the single worst issue of Future State I've read so far.
Oh, it was bad. And like I said, I don't know if his hands are tied at DC. I don't know what's going on, but
I hated it.
I mean, he's a good writer. I mean, a lot of his stuff in the past is phenomenal. So I thought, hey, why not? He's writing it, but
Yeah, this was the equivalent for me of like, I'm trying to think of something that I really, there's not any like vegetables that I really hate to eat, but like I know a lot of people don't like say you hate broccoli or you hate Brussels sprouts or whatever. And when you're a kid, your parents are like, you're not getting up from the table, or if you don't finish that broccoli, you're going to eat it again tomorrow for breakfast or whatever. And you're just like holding your nose and just, chewing
Get
it and
it.
swallowing and just trying to get through it any way you can. That
Yeah.
was me when I was reading this, man. What a stinker. I saw when you were going to cover it, I was a little surprised.
Well, like I said, it was better. Like, well, maybe, because I didn't read none of it. Like I said, I'm not a Legion fan, so I never read the other stuff. So I was like, well, okay, I'll see what happens.
See what happens. It's Bendis. Yeah, I get it. I get it. We'll definitely be talking about it. I'll be talking about it more on our next Future State Spotlight if you want to hear more in depth of why it's so bad. And there's gonna, usually there's three or four of us when we do the Future State Spotlights. I already know one of the guys, like he read the first page of it and he goes, I'm not reading that. So I'm not gonna have anything to say about it. I'm like, that's fine, dude. I would not force anybody to read that book.
It was just the cover. If I was in a stand and I was like, there was nothing else up there but just that book, I walk away from it because the cover was just so unappealing.
Yep.
I was like,
Agree.
what the heck is that?
Agree 100%. All right, well, let's talk about something that's actually good. The Black Kitchen Part One, and I'm don't know if I don't know if I shared the preview of this with you. Oh no, I did, right? I don't know if you got a chance to read it, but anyway, it's The Black Kitchen Part One. It's Daredevil 26, Chip Zdarsky writing, Marco Cicchetto and Mike Hawthorne are the artist. Adriano Di Benedetto is the inker, and we have Marcio Menez on colors. So, in case you're living under a rock and you weren't aware, Daredevil 25 absolutely blew up. November issue, and the reason it blew up is because, unbeknownst to anybody, it wasn't teased in the solicits or anything, Elektra in issue 25 becomes the new Daredevil. And the reason she's doing this is because she wants to show Matt Murdock that she is trustworthy, that she's not a murderer, that she's, on the side of angels, because she needs his help with something. And so she thinks that if she basically protects Hell's Kitchen while Matt or Daredevil's in prison, that he'll then help her out. So that's kind of where we are. And in this issue, it's a King in Black tie-in. So Elektra Daredevil, I'm gonna have to think of a way to say that, like Derelectra or Elect Devil or something. I don't know. I haven't heard anybody come up with a clever mishmash of the names, but we'll have to figure something out. Anyway, Elektra Daredevil's out trying to protect Hell's Kitchen when the Null dragons and symbiotes and whatever show up in Hell's Kitchen and all hell breaks loose and the Kingpin gets caught up in it. And Typhoid Mary, who's one of the Kingpin's bodyguards, gets tied up in it. And Matt, who's in prison, even some of the symbiotes invade the prison, and he is kind of caught up in it, which leads to a crazy last page, like a crazy last page reveal. So I'm very curious to see where that's going to go. So yeah, it's interesting for sure. And the art is done really well. Here's what I didn't necessarily like about it. I understand. Now, I'm not reading the King in Black crossover, but Jay's all in on it. So we'll get him to talk about kind of his perspective. But for me, because I'm not reading that, it felt like two different books here. Because I'm really enjoying what Zdarsky's doing with Matt and the whole idea of him being in prison and him trying to, you know, come to grips with the mistakes he made and, you know, that sort of thing. Zdarsky's really, he's bringing a human side to Daredevil, to Matt Murdock, to the extent that hasn't maybe been done since like Born Again. Like, he's really breaking him down. And so to me, that is like super interesting. And that's what I want to read about. And then, you know, halfway through the book, all of a sudden it turns into the King in Black crossover. And I really, really couldn't care less. And it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's halfway through. We get about 5 or 6 pages of kind of the current story. And then all of a sudden it's King in Black time. And that fills up the rest of the issue, which while it was okay, it's not really what I'm that interested in. So for me, this was probably my least favorite Zdarsky Daredevil issue that I've read so far, because of basically, I don't care about King in Black or symbiotes or any of that stuff. But like I said, there is something that happens on the last page that I'm curious enough about, you know, and my Alexa just went off. Yeah, but I'm curious enough about that. Obviously, I'm going to read the next issue, and hopefully this King in Black stuff won't last too long. But yeah, the regular story I'm all in for. The King in Black story was just kind of meh for me. But the art has been strong, and I'm sure Zdarsky, probably if he had his choice, would have just continued to tell his story and not been mixed up in the King in Black stuff. But I mean, I don't know that for sure. Maybe he's just going to, you know, try to make the best of it, have some fun with it. So did you get a chance to read this, Jay?
Of course.
All right.
I've been hooked on Daredevil because of you. Thank you so much. But I was able, because I'm a pull customer at a good shop in Nashville, Rick's Comics shop. They're awesome. But I told him, hey, I'd like to, you know, get Daredevil on my list. They're like, well, do you want the whole run? I'm like, yeah. They got me the whole run. They gave me Daredevil 25 for cover price. They're like,
wow.
Yeah, because they said, listen, man, you spend like $4 or $5 grand a year with us. That's yours for a cover price. I'm like, thank you so much. So I'm hooked. I like the storyline with the writing, the art. Yeah, I think it was just a timeout, I guess, because Marvel's got to push the sales, I guess, of Noel taking over the whole universe. Yeah. So you can't have one title without him or his symbiotes appearing. So they got to like take a timeout and, you know, throw them in there. The last panel was like, yeah, what's going to happen now? I got it. It was awesome. But I like the artist, the way they draw Mary's hair. It's like, yeah, that's the way I would draw it too. Is that the way, you know, just the artwork is just amazing. And like I said, it's just a break from the regular story, you know, because they got to, you know, make it go across the whole the Marvel universe, you know, with the, you know, the King in Black.
Well, you were just talking about it when you were saying about the Kraven's Last Hunt, right?
Yeah.
So this is set in New York. You can't have the Null Invasion taking over New York in all the other New York books and then have Daredevil like no mention of it.
No, you can't do that. I mean, that's smart on the editor. He was like, no, if we're doing this, we got to do this.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, it was a good book. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I figured you were going to definitely check it out being that it's King in Black. I know how much you're loving that story. So,
oh yeah. Like I said, you got me in the Daredevil, this series. I do have a Daredevil number one, but I just keep that cause I wanted it, but I got that years ago.
Yeah. All right. Well, you should have one more book, right?
Yeah. It's the series, Batman Black and White. This is issue 2. The reason I got the first one, I got part of my pull list was because it's, like 5 mini stories about Batman, each, book. So it's kind of neat because you got a different artist, a different writer for each, you know, little small story. There are so many artists in this thing. okay. You got one story is called The Unjust Judge. That's Tom King. And then you got Mitch Jarrett's. Yeah, he's doing the art. The one that I always appreciate artists and and writers that can do the same thing. So it was All Cats Are Gray by Sophie Campbell. I was like, that's interesting. She did it by herself. The next one is The Spill. Gabriel Hardman and Corinne, is that Becco?
Bechka. Yeah.
Bechka, yeah. And then you got Duel, written and illustrated by Justin Weaver. And then The Devil Is in the Detail. Same thing, is written and illustrated by David Aja. Hope I said that right.
Yep.
And then they got some pinups in there. So you can see, you know, different artists, you know, doing pinups of the Batman. Every story is very unique and every story is just amazing. The artwork is just black and white. So I always appreciate black and white ever since the Ninja Turtles, because I just love that black and white. Sometimes you don't need color. And for this, for Batman, he's Batman. You don't need color. But the first story is The Unjust Judge. It's Batman, but being more human side of Batman, not him being, you know, brooding in the corner, being, but this is him, you know, being human, you know, taking the cowl, you know, just being a man, you know, being a, you know, one with mankind. It was good. It was a really good story. The other one, Cats Are Gray. I love it. There's no words in it. It was perfect. Sometimes you just don't need words. It reminded me when I read, I think it was G.I. Joe number 20 or 21, where yeah. It was Snake Eyes and it was no words. Yeah. And that's when you get the big reveal in that. I could talk about it, but you know, they're related. You're like, what? Because they show the, you know, their uniform tore off and you see the tattoo.
Yep.
And the reason I appreciate that so much is because the guy that was doing the writing was actually in the military. He knows all that kung fu stuff. So he actually, you know, it was cool that he did that. You know, he took a product that nobody really wanted to touch, and then he made it to a huge number one selling product with the toys and everything. But everybody was like, no, I'm not touching that because that's G.I. Joe. Ugh. You know, we're not going to get a lot of money from that. I don't want to touch it. But he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And he made it into gold.
Yeah, Larry Hama.
Yeah, he made it into gold. And then you got The Spill, which is really good. It's pretty much, you know, the Batman, the Joker, but it's just really, really good. I mean, the artwork is perfect for the rain. I mean, you can see every detail just in black and white. It was just so good. The Duel was interesting because it's good, but there's a lot more white in that one, which is so neat how they did that. You know, it's not really, it's bright. For some of the, sort of, you know, the character in there, but it was good. The Devil Is in the Details. It was like a throwback from, you know, the 40s, which I love, you know, the old school strips. And that was just amazing how they did that. You know, they went to old school drawing on that one. It was perfect. I haven't seen that since, you know, forever. When you look at the old newspaper magazines, you know, but all in all, I'm glad I got the book. And then, that, you know, there's five stories from different artists, writers. So it's always fun to see what their one story is going to be about Batman. You know, it's like, you know, there's a character, do what you want with it. So I like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like this issue as much as I thought I would based on the talent. I agree with you on the first story. The Tom King, Mitch Garrett story is amazing. But, you know, again, to beat on a dead horse, I can't stand the Joker. And that Joker story by Bechko and Hardman, it was just a Joker story. You know, it was like, it was just kind of.
It was still, I mean, the artwork, I really say the story artwork, was like great. No. I said the artwork was phenomenal. That's what I love was
the
artwork.
Yeah, the artwork is really great. Yeah, but I didn't think it was anything special.
No.
Sophie Campbell won. I did kind of like the switch up by Catwoman in the middle. And yes. I like the fact that it was a silent issue, but I feel like we only got it's over. We didn't get the end of the story. Like it just kind of ends.
Yeah. I feel like I needed at least two more pages, yeah. at least two
and
more
I
pages.
I felt the same way about the Dustin Weaver story. Duel. Like I get it. But he leaves the ending kind of ambiguous, and I'm sure he does it on purpose.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm one of those guys that I'm like,
you want closure.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, what?
But what about the last story? I thought that was just neat how they kind of did that.
Yeah. The last story is kind of the same thing. Like, yeah, I love it that it's imitating those old 1940 strips. That's really cool. And the art style is really cool, but the last strip is from December 9th, 1949. Can I see like December 10th, 1940, and December 11th? Because again, it just, I'm like, wait, that's the last, that, wait, what? Wait, like, I don't know. I just wanted a little more, and maybe I would have been okay with like one or two stories that ended very abruptly and kind of ambiguously. But we get three of them. Three of the five in this book don't have endings in my mind.
Well, I don't think Batman was ever going to have an ending. I mean, his story's going to go on forever. I guess
Yeah, I
that's the way I
know.
look at
At least,
it.
yeah, at least give me a little more resolution than this. These are like way up in the air. Almost, they almost end on cliffhangers. I'm like, come on, man.
No, I like the last one because down on my my collection, I actually have a it's frame and mounted. It's actually a comic panel that Stan Lee was sketching, so I have that and it's autographed and I got it framed.
Nice.
So it's actually his work. So I was like, yeah, that's my pride and joy around there.
All right, well, let me go on to my last book. It's Fantastic Four number 28 with a really cool Mark Brooks cover, written by Dan Slott. Art is by R.B. Silva, colors by Jesus Arbatov, and letters by Joe Caramagna. So that art team of Silva and Arbatov is great. Very bright colors, a lot of big boisterous explosions, and it's a very cosmic issue, and we get like these pinks and oranges and blues, a lot of action going on. Silver Surfer shows up. So I was very happy with the way the book looked. As far as the story goes, I've been talking about this Forever Gate that has been going on in Fantastic Four for the last few issues, and how, as an idea, it's a great thing to put the Fantastic Four in charge of, right? Because it this Forever Gate basically connects to every point in space and every point in time in the Marvel universe, or the Marvel multiverse, whatever you want to call it. So that's great for the Fantastic Four because they're not, I mean, people will call them superheroes, but they're really adventurers, They're about going out on adventures and exploring and that kind of thing. And so having this gate is perfect for them. But the problem with this issue is the way that it all gets resolved. It's one of those things where it's been built up with this, Griever, who supposedly is this new cosmic being that Dan Slott has introduced to the Marvel Universe. And her whole job is to end creation. Like, she exists to end existence, basically. So you need somebody like that. Like, every existence, every universe, whatever label you want to put on it, it's finite. It's at some point it's going to come to an end, and she's the one that's going to be there to end everything. But she's kind of overstepping her bounds a little bit. She's actively pushing to end it now. So obviously these heroes, the Fantastic Four, along with members of the Future Foundation who showed up last issue, or might have been the issue before, through the Forever Gate. And they're trying to stop her. I'm like, no, don't end all existence. People deserve to live, or what have you. And so, being that the Griever is so powerful, she's very hard to defeat, obviously. And then in the end, in this issue, it's kind of like Reed just does something, kind of, little light bulb pops on, and he snaps his fingers, and it's all good. It's all done. You built up this huge story. And instead of having some sort of epic battle, or them figuring out something clever, it just ends kind of with a whimper. And so I don't know, it felt very anticlimactic, and I felt like there were some opportunities there to do some cool things and to really move the narrative of the Fantastic Four forward. But instead, it was like it almost felt like Slott was writing and he was really excited and he's all into it. And then he got distracted, or he ran out of pages, and he just went, how can I end this as quickly as possible? Okay, let me type up this sentence. All right, that's it. I'm done. I don't know. It was kind of disappointing. It's probably my least favorite issue of the Fantastic Four that he's done since he's been on the book. So it's kind of disappointing. But I will say that the Mark Brooks cover is outstanding. It's really great. You've got the Fantastic Four there and somebody holding the ultimate nullifier, just like the ultimate weapon in the Marvel Universe. So I appreciated that. I mean, Mark Brooks covers is half the reason I buy the Fantastic Four in the in physical copies of it. Probably more than half the reason, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I'm big fan of Mark. So, all right, well, let me give a rundown on some other books that are out today that you might want to be on the lookout for. At Aftershock, in addition to Kaiju Score, which I talked about, we have Sympathy for No Devils, number 4. Over at Boom, we've got the 4th issue of the Dune House of Atreides maxi series. We've got Something is Killing the Children, number 14, from James Tynan. Also, We Only Find Them When They're Dead, from Al Ewing, is out today. At DC, in addition to the books that we mentioned, Batman White Knight Presents Harley Quinn, number 4. Really great issue of that series. There's going to be 6 issues, so two-thirds of the way done. Kind of similar to Joker Harley Criminal Sanity. That's a different look at Harley, where she's much less zany and they portray her as more intelligent, kind of a stronger character. So I've been enjoying that one. Have you been reading that one?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I just like that her interaction with Batman isn't what it normally is either. It's very it's different. I don't know where they're going with it, but I like it. It's just something nice, you know. And then she's a mother, so which is interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, I always say I'm not a fan of Harley Quinn, but it's like I'm not a fan of the goofy, zany Harley. I'm a fan of this. Like, I'm a fan of the Harley in this, where she's just more intelligent, and I'm a fan of the Harley where she's super intelligent in Joker Harley Criminal Sanity. It's like just the whole zany thing just doesn't do it for me. It's just not a fan of Harley like that.
Well, it's good that DC, you know, made her mature and kind of got her away from her. And, you know, she had her own series, so it kind of like helped get away from all that and do her own little thing, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Also out from DC today. So this is a book that I have been anticipating for over a year. DC put out a book just internationally collecting the artwork of Lee Bermejo. Lee is one of my favorite artists. He's a friend of mine. And they finally released it in the US. So it's DC Comics, The Art of Lee Bermejo. It's a hardcover. I cannot wait till my copy comes in. So excited. So, I mean, if you get a chance, it's a little pricey. It is $50, but it's worth it in my mind for a hardcover of Bermejo's art. So, I mean, maybe if your shop has a copy, you can't afford it, you can at least flip through it and see how amazing it is. Also from DC, I know that Jay's not a big fan of Aquaman, but man, I'm telling you, Future State Aquaman number 1, I think that's my favorite Future State book that I've read so far. It was so damn good. And I'm going to be sad to see it only last 2 issues, I think. Like, that's how good it was. It was so good. We also have the 2nd issue of Future State Dark Detective. I think we talked about all the other. Oh, no, there is one other Future State book that we didn't mention. There's a Future State Superman versus Imperious Lex, which is basically Lex Luthor is the ruler of a planet, and his planet is applying for membership in the United Planets. And the United Planets representative for Earth is Lois Lane. And she kind of gets all mixed up with Lex's desire to be part of the United Planets. Also, Last God, number 12, from Philip Kennedy Johnson. That's the final issue of that Black Label series. That's out today. And Strange Adventures, number 8, from Tom King and Mitch Garrett's Doc Shaner. That number 8 of 12 is out today. Over at Image, I don't think we talked about. Yeah, we didn't talk about any Image books. Department of Truth, number 5, which I've been reading that series and enjoying it. I just didn't get a chance to get to it today, so I still need to read that from this week. And also Spawn, number 314, is out from Image. Over at Marvel, in addition to the books we talked about, Conan the Barbarian, number 18, is out today. There's a new issue of Savage Avengers, number 17. Marvel's, number 4, by Alex Ross, number 4 of 6 is out. Shang-Chi, final issue of that miniseries, number 5 of 5 is out today. Over on the X-Men corner of the universe, X-Men number 17 is out, as is Wolverine number 9. And I think that's it. I think there's anything else coming out. Oh, I guess I should mention over at Valiant, Exo Manowar number 4 is out from Dennis Hopeless Hallam. So those are some other books you might want to be on the lookout for today as you hit your local comic shop. Quite a few good books. If you had to pick a favorite of those books that you read, Jay, your book of the week, so to speak, what would it be?
Oh, that I read? Oh, yeah. Batman Black and White.
All right. That's an interesting choice. I have to probably go with the other history of the DC Universe again. Even though it wasn't as good as the first issue of the series, I think it just slightly edges out the Joker Harley Criminal Sanity for me, just in quality. And also because, you know, Harley looks like she might be going down a path I don't want her to go down. Like, no, Harley, turn away from the bad side. Oh. So yeah, for me, I think the other history of the DC Universe is going to be my book of the week. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.